God tells us to forgive, right? But when and how should we forgive? Are there times when we shouldn't forgive? Can forgiveness actually hurt someone? Bob Inyart's teaching on forgiveness shows us what the Bible really teaches about forgiveness. The three-part forgiveness series is available on DVD video or in audio on MP3 CD by calling 1-800-8-INYART. Or you can get the video, CD, or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Back in 1999, when a judge ordered O.J. Simpson's property to be sold at auction because he was found guilty in a civil case, being held responsible for the deaths of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. And so his property was ordered to be sold, and the proceeds go to the families of the victims. And we went out there and we purchased his Hall of Fame award, his jersey, Heisman 68, and destroyed it on the steps of the LA courthouse. And in so doing, we called for three reforms in the criminal justice system, and also that the NFL would vacate O.J. Simpson's position in his awards in the Hall of Fame. And the NFL Hall of Fame refused to do that. They balked at that idea. And it is somewhat rewarding, and there's a sense of vindication now, 13 years later, that the NCAA, the organization that runs college sports in America, that they have vacated the wins of Penn State, their football program, and the sanctions they have put on that state university are absolutely stunning. Now, of course, people, you know, we're a nation of critics and we criticize everything and everyone for absolutely every possible permutation of any thought and every action. And so, of course, there'll be many people who criticize them. But what I'd like to do is take the audio from the press conference where this was announced and share this with you. I think you'll have to agree that this is historic. This is the NCAA saying that Penn State brought scandal to a whole new level, and we are going to bring the penalties, the sanctions, to a whole new level. So let's listen to this, and then we'll talk through it.
The Penn State case has provoked in all of us deeply powerful emotions and shaken our most fundamental confidence in many ways. As we, the executive committee, the Division I board, and I, have examined and discussed this case, we've kept foremost in our thoughts the tragic damage that has been done to the victims and their families. No matter what we do here today, there is no action we can take that'll remove their pain and anguish. But what we can do is impose sanctions that both reflect the magnitude of these terrible acts and that also ensure that Penn State will rebuild an athletic culture that went horribly awry. Our goal is not to be just punitive, but to make sure the university establishes an athletic culture and daily mindset in which football will never again be placed ahead of educating, nurturing, and protecting young people. More than 100 years ago, the NCAA was created to assure that sports are fully integrated into our colleges and universities, and that the athletic programs wholly embrace the values of higher education. Our Constitution and bylaws make it perfectly clear that the association exists not simply to promote fair play on the field, but to insist that athletic programs provide positive moral models for our students, enhance the integrity of higher education, and promote the values of civility, honesty, and responsibility. The sanctions we are imposing are based upon these most fundamental principles of the NCAA. With these intentions in mind, the Executive Committee, the Division I Board, and I have agreed upon the following sanctions. First, the NCAA is imposing a fine of $60 million on the university, with the funds to be used to establish an endowment to support programs around the nation that serve the victims of child sexual abuse and seek to prevent such abuse from happening. This amount is the equivalent of 1 year's gross revenue of the football team. Second, Penn State football will be banned from bowl games and any other postseason play for 4 years. Third, Penn State's football team will have its initial scholarships reduced from 25 to 15 per year for a period of 4 years. In order to minimize the negative impact on student athletes, the NCAA will allow any entering or returning football student athletes to transfer and immediately compete at the transfer university, provided he is otherwise eligible. Further, any football student athlete who wants to remain at Penn State may retain his athletic grant and aid as long as he meets and maintains appropriate academic requirements, regardless of whether he competes on the football team. Fourth, the NCAA vacates all wins of the Penn State football team from 1998 to 2011, and the records will reflect these changes. Fifth, the university athletic program will serve a 5-year probationary period during which it must work with an academic integrity monitor of the association's choosing. And finally, the NCAA is reserving the right to initiate a formal investigation and disciplinary processes to impose sanctions as needed on individuals involved in this case after the conclusion of any criminal proceedings. Beyond these sanctions, the NCAA is imposing other corrective actions to ensure that the intended cultural changes actually occur. The NCAA is requiring the university to adopt the formal reforms delineated in Chapter 10 of the Free Report, particularly Section 5.0. Additionally, the association is requiring Penn State to enter into an athletic integrity agreement with the NCAA and the Big Ten Conference. This agreement will require the establishment of a chief compliance officer position, a compliance council, and an array of control mechanisms that are intended to ensure the athletic culture will be fully integrated into the broader university. And finally, the NCAA will select an independent athletics integrity monitor who will, for a 5-year period, report quarterly to the NCAA, the university's Board of Trustees, and the Big Ten Conference. They will report on the progress Penn State is making in implementing all provisions of this agreement. Let me address also the issue of the so-called death penalty. The Executive Committee, the Division I Board, and I had extensive discussions about the appropriateness of imposing a suspension of football for 1 or more years. An argument can be made that the egregiousness of the behavior in this case is greater than any other seen in NCAA history, and that therefore a multi-year suspension is appropriate. After much debate, however, we concluded that the sanctions needed to reflect our goals of driving cultural change as much as apply punitive actions. Suspension of the football program would bring with it significant unintended harm to many who had nothing to do with this case. The sanctions we have crafted are more focused and impactful than that blanket penalty. Moreover, the actions already taken by the new chair of the board, Karen Peets, and the new president, Rodney Erickson, have demonstrated a strong desire and determination on the part of Penn State to take the steps necessary for the university to right these severe wrongs, and were appreciated by all of us. For the next several years now, Penn State can focus on the work of rebuilding its athletic culture, not worrying about whether or not it's going to a bowl game. With the sanctions imposed today and with the new leadership, the university, we hope, indeed, we intend to ensure that that will be the case. In closing, let me say that this case involves tragic and tragically unnecessary circumstances. One of the grave dangers stemming from our love of sports is that the sports themselves can become too big to fail, indeed, too big to even challenge. The result can be an erosion of academic values that are replaced by the value of hero worship and winning at all costs. All involved in intercollegiate athletics must be watchful that programs and individuals do not overwhelm the values of higher education. In the Penn State case, the results were perverse and unconscionable. No price the NCAA can levy will repair the grievous damage inflicted by Jerry Sandusky on his victims. However, we can make clear that the culture, actions, and inactions that allowed them to be victimized will not be tolerated in collegiate athletics.
All right, that is the statement from the NCAA and their president, Mark Emmert. And this comes, of course, after last year, Pennsylvania State University fired their head football coach, Joe Paterno, the university president, Graham Spanier. And now all these severe consequences, which I think are extraordinary. And of course, people are going to say, well, this is no fair to the student players. And if there was a, obviously there was, there's a quarterback who won 24 games during those years where their wins were vacated. And he gets to go on and say he was the quarterback, and an NFL team interested in drafting him, they'll know that he won those games. But this is a way of penalizing the school, the institution, in such a severe way that it will send shockwaves throughout the university system. And hopefully beyond that, throughout our culture, because there is a real difficult problem when you tolerate the perversion of homosexuality, then all standards of morality are up for grabs. Everything becomes relative, moral relativism. And just because a guy maybe has a peculiar sexual interest, just because he makes some bad decisions, doesn't mean we have to then fill in the blank. Do what is right. Warn the families. Go to the police. Fire him. And so it's not only churches that failed to report child abuse and kept predators where they could continue to hurt more kids. And it has become a phenomenon that when our society began to tolerate homosexuality, then that included toleration of all kinds of perversion. It's surprising to me that we don't at least hear from conservative talk shows. I'm not talking about ABC, NBC, CBS. I'm not talking about the Washington Post, the LA Times, NPR. I'm talking about conservative Sean Hannity. And he's not conservative, but a lot of people think he's conservative. Here at Bob and Yurt Live, we expose the liberal in the conservative. But I'm surprised that Hugh Hewitt and Dennis Prager and Rush Limbaugh, and just add the names up, Michael Medved, and on, have you heard them say, we've said it here at Bob and Yurt Live, that Jerry Sandusky was a homosexual child molester? Have you heard that? Have you heard it? I have not heard it on a single show. I don't think Glenn Beck has said it. I don't think Michael Savage has said it. Jerry Sandusky was a homosexual child molester. And homosexuals, they just go berserk when you point this out. They think that for some reason They are the only class of human being that cannot be a child molester. There could be liberal child molesters, atheist child molesters, religious child molesters, any ethnicity child molester, heterosexual child molesters, but just not homosexual. Can't be. It is not theoretically possible. That's according to my debate with one of the nation's leading homosexual activists, Wayne Besson, that you could hear at our website, kgov.com/Besson, B-E-S-E-N, or kgov.com/homo for short, H-O-M-O. You know what they used to put on top of the milk cartons until everybody got grossed out when they thought about it? So in that debate with Wayne Besson, I pointed out that many male child molesters hurt only girls, and many female molesters hurt only boys, and that these people are heterosexual child molesters. Now, is that confusing to anyone? Is that confusing? So a man that hurts only girls and a woman that hurts only boys is they are heterosexual child molesters. Likewise, there are adult bisexuals, and there are also bisexual child molesters. And male molesters who only rape boys are homosexual child molesters. Females who only molest girls are lesbian molesters. Homosexuals deny all this. So does the entire media in America. And the typical conservative, quasi-conservative radio talk show host is so intimidated by the homosexual lobby that they can't even point out that Jerry Sandusky was a homosexual child molester. They can't point that out. And of course he was. So a $60 million fine, and it was especially important that the NCAA did not say that the $60 million fine is paid to the NCAA. You know, that would have put their entire effort into question. So that was very wise of them. I'm also thankful that they pointed out that they thought long and hard about how to make the consequences as severe as they could with thought and concern toward the student athletes who are innocent victims in this. The ban, a 4-year ban on bowl games, postseason games. You know that most first-rate athletes in college sports would leave a school that couldn't go to the postseason. They'd leave it. And until now, there was a restriction because if you switch schools, you are prohibited from participating in the sport for a certain amount of time, and they've lifted that. They've given exemptions to that to all the current Penn State football players and those who are to play this coming year for their first year. So incoming and existing students are exempted from that, and so there very well may be an exodus, likely will be an exodus, of their best players. And then reducing scholarships over the next 4 years. That, of course, is going to keep some of the premier football players out of the Penn State program. When I flew to California a few weeks ago with my wife, we went for a wedding for one of our longtime dear friends, Randy Hayes, his beautiful wife, Jennifer. Randy has traveled with us on ministry trips to Israel. We have a Bible Tour of Israel DVD, to Turkey, to Greece. We went to New Zealand, an important project of Bob Enyart Live. I mean, somebody's got to do it, right? We have a wonderful time on these trips, but they're also important ministry trips, Bible teaching trips, attempting to fight for the moral and social and spiritual well-being of the culture. And Randy has gone on a number of those trips with us. And flying to L.A., I sat next to a kid who was going out to Berkeley. I don't want to name the student, but a Denver football player who is heading out to Berkeley because he's received an offer from the school. And that's the third school that's given him an offer. And so he wants to evaluate it. And good for him. He's been tuning in to Real Science Friday. Neat kid. And so these young players, they decide, you know, where am I going to go to school? And if the scholarship opportunities are not there, many of them are not going to consider Penn State. And so this is going to affect their program for many years to come. And the $60 million, notice if the fine went to the NCAA, which it doesn't, but if it did, then everyone would suspect the integrity of the NCAA. Isn't that true? Of course, that's obvious, right? That is why God never authorized governments to fine criminals. If a government says, well, if you commit these crimes, then you have to pay fines to who? To the government. Well, then all of a sudden, crime becomes a growth industry and a major revenue source. Crime is a revenue center. And so where God authorizes restitution be paid to the victims, which is exactly what the NCAA is trying to accomplish here, what our government does is pervert that to where the criminal pays a fine to the government. And then the government turns out that, you know, you commit a crime and they're not really all that angry with you. They'll treat you with tremendous respect and all. And they, for most crimes, you got to pay a fine of $400, $800, $3,000, $40,000. When it gets up to the federal government, $20 million fine. The U is big on this. The U. What is the U? That's the European Union. The U. The EU fines international corporations $50 million, $100 million, and who gets the money? EU gets the money. The EU. And so the NCAA, Mark Emmert, they had the wisdom and the integrity to say that we're not going to touch that money. We are not going to touch that money. And so often, if you have a jail ministry, I've had lengthy times in my life where I've had the honor of being in a jail ministry. And it turns out that so many of the inmates think that the government is really, they go to court and the government wants them to pay fines. They commit a crime, they got to pay a fine. Commit another crime, pay a fine. Commit another crime, pay a fine. And they have the sense that it's about money. And, you know, there's tens of millions of Americans that get the sense when they go to court after they've been there once or twice that it's about money. We have an actual historical account of a sheriff who told his officers, I do not want you wasting your time giving out speeding tickets to people who are not endangering other people, to drivers. And the county commissioners heard about it. And they changed their accounting procedures, and they had all the revenue from the speeding traffic tickets go into the sheriff's department's budget. The sheriff called a meeting, and he said, every one of my deputies must issue at least one traffic ticket a day. He spun on the dime. And so that money flowing into the government represents millions, tens of millions of dollars, depending on the jurisdiction. It's a credibility issue. So there is a systemic reason why people think that we no longer have a justice system. Now it's just a system. And that's only one of the reasons. There are many. That's one. So good for the NCAA. And back in 1999, when we called for O.J. Simpson for his induction into the NFL Hall of Fame to be vacated, the officials at the Hall of Fame responded and rejected our request. I don't know, was it a request, a demand? I always think it's a little weird when people say, I demand, and you don't have any authority to demand. I don't know quite what that means. But we're outraged that they would continue to allow O.J. Simpson to have this honor. And you don't honor murderers. You don't honor unrepentant murderers. You just don't do it. This is historic, what has happened at Penn State with the NCAA. I mean, who would have thunk it? I simply didn't expect this kind of extraordinary effort on their part. And so what we need to realize, though, now is just as the crisis came onto the Catholic Church as a result of them normalizing homosexuals in their seminaries back in the 1960s and 70s, when they changed their policy, it may have been unwritten, and it wasn't in all their seminaries, but in many seminaries, they admitted homosexuals as long as they would pledge to be celibate. And that was such an insult to the morality that flows from God that this wrath came down on them. And I don't mean it was wrath from God. I mean, when you sow to the wind, you reap the whirlwind. This was the natural consequences. And it's not just in a church. Here it is at a university, a secular university. And as the nation now is accepting homosexuality, that is just what's happened to the Catholic Church and what has happened to Penn State. Those are just the previews of the destruction that is to come. What is being unleashed on America and on the rest of the world, where they now tolerate and have attempted to normalize homosexuality, it is hell itself unleashed on a society. And that's what's coming. But the darker it gets, the brighter the light of Christ can shine. So Terry Johnston of Knoxville, Tennessee, became a believer through this program. He was not only longtime homosexual, but HIV positive. My wife, Cheryl, and I sent him money to come out to Colorado. And we have a DVD, Terry's Call, on converting a homosexual. So you might want to go to kgov.com. That's our website, kgov.com/homosexual. That'll get you there. You could hear the debate, not with just an amateur. I mean, somebody who's not really involved, maybe they don't know the answers. This is with one of the nation's leading homosexual activists, Wayne Besson. And you could hear the issue actually battled out. And the strength and the truth comes from the side of the Word of God. So, and you could get Terry's Call. And hey, our signatures, the deadline is July 31st in Colorado. Check it out, Colorado Right to Life.
God tells us to forgive, right? But when and how should we forgive? Are there times when we shouldn't forgive? Can forgiveness actually hurt someone? Bob Inyart's teaching on forgiveness shows us what the Bible really teaches about forgiveness. The 3-part forgiveness series is available on DVD video or in audio on MP3 CD by calling 1-800-8-INYART. Or you can get the video, CD, or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.